Hey, it's Payne. I want to share a message from our sponsor, Spot Pet Insurance. Sometimes unexpected vet bills can hit hard when we least expect them. And if life throws you a curveball and your beloved pet needs urgent medical attention, the vet bills can start piling up. Enter Spot Pet Insurance, the ally you never knew you needed. Spot Pet Insurance plans can offer up to 90% cash back on eligible vet bills, providing a safety net when the unexpected occurs. Life can be unpredictable, and so are the needs of our furry companions. Spot Pet Insurance understands that. With Spot, you can focus on the things that matter, knowing that your pet has coverage to help protect your wallet from those unexpected vet bills. Spot Pet Insurance plans don't just offer coverage for unexpected accidents and illnesses. You can add their preventative care benefit to your plan, ensuring that routine wellness, vaccines, and more can all be covered too. It's a shield against the unexpected. If you have a pet, consider Spot Pet Insurance, because having the right resources at the right time can make all the difference. Just go to spotpet.com. Paid ad from Spot Pet Insurance. Waiting periods, annual deductible, coinsurance, benefit limits, and exclusions may apply. For all terms, visit spotpetins.com/sample-policy. Insurance plans are underwritten by either Independence American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company, and produced by Spot Pet Insurance Services, LLC.
Hey, Tenderfoot listeners. I'm Liam Luxon, host of Status Untraced, a new podcast brought to you from the team behind Up and Vanished. It follows my investigation into the disappearance of Justin Alexander, a survivalist and world traveler whose life seemed like it was torn from the pages of an adventure novel. While some of Justin's friends and family believe he may have been murdered, it's not clear what actually happened. And a message he left behind just days before he vanished makes everything about his disappearance just strange. Check out this clip featuring one of Justin's friends and their recollection of their final conversation with him.
It was one thing that kind of made me feel weird about whenever he'd talk about his plans for India. And the more I've thought about it, especially over the years, it almost seemed like he was preparing for something because he wanted to be famous. He made that openly clear, like that was his end goal.
When you hear the message Justin left behind, when you hear about the remote and dangerous area where he went missing, when you learn about how the suspects and the police's efforts in this case all quietly started to fade away, you won't be able to stop wondering what happened. From Tenderfoot TV, Status Untraced is available now. Listen for free on Apple Podcasts or subscribe to Tenderfoot Plus to binge the entire season ad-free. Learn more at tenderfootplus.com.
In the last 2 weeks, I've been flooded with emails and messages from locals in Osceola who are all very angry. In a very vague and misguided way, they're all angry because they feel like the podcast has disrespected them. Many of these direct messages to me were filled with threats of violence and legal action. But the strangest thing about it is that I've never once mentioned any of these people by name on this podcast. None of them. But it seems that somewhere along the way here in recent weeks, through my investigation, I've hit a nerve in this case, with a select group of people. As a general rule of thumb, I try my best to steer clear of wild speculation and to only follow the facts in this case. The problem is that in this case, as we've all learned, the facts are very hard to find, and there are several reasons for that. One, the GBI has kept this case file, which is the largest in the history of the state of Georgia, a secret from the public for well over a decade. They chased down hundreds of leads and obtained DNA swabs from over 200 people in Tara's life, all of which had nothing to do at all with what actually happened to Tara. And two, for the most part, before this podcast was around, almost all of Tara's close associates in her life had remained silent, and the GBI was never able to officially rule anybody out as a suspect in this case. And finally, as we've all learned over the past few months, Bo and Ryan were not the only people who knew what happened to Tara. Unless everyone I've talked to is lying, we know there was a search that happened just a few weeks after Tara went missing, out there on the orchard, based on a tip that Ryan Duke told someone at a party one night that he killed Tara. And Bo Duke said himself that he too told multiple people about this over the years, but no one did anything. So to me, the problem with this case is pretty clear. Secrecy and silence. A select group of people in Osceola have chosen to remain silent over the years and withhold valuable information that could have potentially solved this case as early as 2 weeks after Tara Grinstead disappeared. So the recent threats I've received, stemming from practically zero basis, only underscore this problem even more. I'm not pointing a finger at anyone. The GBI said Ryan Duke killed Tara. Not me. The GBI and Beau Dukes himself said that he burned Tara's body in the pecan orchard. Not me. Close friends of Beau Dukes said that other people in their friend circle knew about this. Not me. Beau's girlfriend Brooke said that 8 people were there at Beau and Ryan's house that night. Not me. So let this be a public service announcement to everyone out there. I follow the facts, and that's the only thing I'll ever report on. If you think that these facts are wrong, then by all means, come tell the world what the real story is. And if you can't do that, then in my eyes, you're exactly the reason this case took 12 years to solve. You chose to sit back, hiding under a rock, while rumors and speculation ran wild. And now, a decade later, I choose to spend 2 years of my life dedicated to finding the truth in this case. And then you emerge from the woodworks, ready to sling mud, and try to paint me as the problem. So here's my message to all of you. Don't be a coward. Your measly efforts at trying to stop me from finding the truth aren't working. And to all those people both locally in Osceola and all over the world who have shown me your support, I want you to know that I sincerely appreciate it. There's only 2 episodes left, and I will stop at nothing to find the truth.
More than 40 GBI agents swarmed a pecan orchard in Ben Hill County this afternoon.
Not one, but 2 former students from that school under arrest.
With the intent to indeed cause serious bodily harm to the person of Tara Grinstead.
Charging Ryan Alexander Duke with the murder of Tara Grinstead.
From Tenderfoot TV at Industrious Atlanta, this is Up and Vanished, the investigation of Tara Grinstead. I'm your host, Payne Lindsay.
They're very well connected. They're very wealthy. They're also a bunch of hellraisers and did a lot of bad things. There was one particular incident where a group of guys from Irwin County went over to Ben Hill County, went over to Fishtrail, and got in a fight with some guys over there. And they jumped on somebody with a baseball bat, nearly killed him, hospitalized him, beat him very badly. And nothing ever came from it. They didn't get any trouble. Nothing was ever said. No charges ever filed. Nothing. You know, and that's just the kind of things, from what I understand, that they used to do. This circle of friends was always doing bad things. They were always covering for each other. And this was just one more thing to cover for.
According to one of my early sources, Beau and Ryan's group of friends were part of a huge fight back in 2004 that left 2 men nearly beaten to death. As the story goes, Beau's group of friends were never charged, and instead, 3 men from Fitzgerald became the scapegoats. If this fight was so big, I figured there had to be a record of it somewhere. So I first went to the Osceola Star archives. And sure enough, Dusty knew what I was talking about right away.
Somebody said something to somebody on the phone, and all of a sudden this big posse of people shows up. But the only people who got arrested were 3 guys from Fitzgerald.
Really?
Yeah.
You made the paper?
Yeah, front page. They beat somebody damn near to death.
Dusty seemed to know all about this story, and he even recalled there being an article about it in the paper back in 2004. That seemed pretty surprising to me, that a local fight would make the front page news. All accounts, this was not your typical neighborhood fight.
According to witnesses, the May 2nd fight apparently broke out when a group of young men from Irwin and Ben Hill counties, about 10 to 15 in number, came to the Mystic location ready to fight.
10 to 15?
Yeah. Oh, I heard there were like 40 or something people there.
This was a huge brawl that involved dozens of people, some reportedly with pipes and baseball bats, and it left 2 men nearly dead, one of them an older man in his mid-60s, who apparently was just trying to break up the fight.
Louis Fussell III, Joseph Stone, all Fitzgerald residents.
Yeah. But but the Irwin residents didn't get charged. Strange, isn't it?
As I read the names of the men in Fitzgerald who were charged in this fight, one of those names rang a bell in my head.
Joey Stone, Joseph Stone, is the guy that I talked to before on the podcast, who told me the story about being in the truck with Ryan.
It clicked. Joey was someone I had talked to before. I had never mentioned his name in the podcast, but you probably remember hearing his story.
We rode out in that orchard. It was just a few people, and maybe three trucks around the fire. And there was one dude out there, and that was Bo Duke. You know, this Bo Duke, I'd always kind of heard about him and known about him through high school, and then something happened. Bo Duke's got upset. I don't know if he was upset since we were out there or what, but we got kind of a funny vibe, and we just saw him get upset. We saw kind of a commotion at the back of the truck.
Joey told me about a time back in 2005 that he had been out there on the pecan orchard. He remembered there being a huge fire with trucks around it and Bo Dukes being there. Joey sat in a truck and talked to a guy that he didn't know for about an hour that night.
And I sat in his truck and I called this guy for probably an hour. And I've been going over for the last couple of days in my mind over and over again. And it seems to me like the guy I was talking to was Ryan Duke.
Looking back on it, he thought that it may have been Ryan Duke he was talking to in the truck. Ironically, a black truck, as he recalled.
To the best of my memory, a black single cab truck.
And as I went back to re-listen to this phone call myself, I realized one more detail he had told me about his conversation in the black truck with whom he thinks was Ryan Duke.
We were talking about the fight that me and my friend that was there with me got into the previous year, 2004.
He mentioned the fight from 2004. According to my first source, Bo and Ryan's friend circle were the major players in this fight, but they all got off scot-free. And according to the paper, Joey Stone and two other men from Fitzgerald were the ones charged for the crime. Before I got ahead of myself, I wanted to call Joey again. What was his side of the story? I called him back to see.
The guy got pulverized in the face. I forget his name. He had to have like reconstructive face surgery. And see, I believe if you read back in that article, they slanderous. They say that, you know, it happened. They didn't use the word allegedly or this, that, and the other. They said, you know, they said I hit a guy with a pipe, which is totally false. It's all very strange. And the story that they got is just total fabrication. It's like totally made up stories.
Still, nearly 13 years later, Joey Stone pled his innocence and claimed that he was just a scapegoat for Bo's circle of friends. Joey wasn't very close to Bo's friend circle. He only knew them through his friend Lewis, who was also charged in the fight. Lewis was good friends with a guy named Josh Bowden, who ran in the circle of Bo Duke's friends. Josh Bowden had invited Lewis to the orchard that one night, and he brought along Joey Stone. That's when Joey sat in the truck with who he now thinks is Ryan Duke.
I mean, Josh and Lewis were close, and they had always been close. Lewis knows the most silly people, but he ain't close with nobody like he is Josh Bowden. We was all partying at Fitzgerald, and then Bowden shows up, and Fitzgerald like, y'all come on, let's go. These boys are talking junk. Let's go get them. It is a solid fact in my mind that Josh is the one who called us out there. He was the ringleader who rounded us all up and took us to the fight. He was the man. You know, none of the Osceola people, it was just Fitzgerald people. They threw us under the bus. But, you know, it ruined my life. But it was all because of Josh Bowden.
It's a lot of names to remember. Trust me, I know. But as I learned more and more about this story, I began to see why this might be so important. According to Joey, the fight was essentially started by Josh Bowden. Joey Stone was charged with a felony and says it still haunts him today. And as for Josh Bowden and the rest of Bo's friends, they were never charged. And Joey says that's not by coincidence.
He just said to himself, well, my son's not going to be involved, and he didn't involve him. He didn't get charged with nothing, even though he was the number one cohort of he was the guy who started it all.
Josh Bowden is the son of Paul Bowden, the district attorney for the Tifton Judicial Circuit, covering Irwin County. Two men were hospitalized and nearly beaten to death. So this crime was not going unpunished. And here was a guy who was convinced that the district attorney Paul Bowden blamed the fight on him and his two friends in order to shield his own son and his close friends from any of the charges. I wasn't there, so I can't tell you what happened that night. But if Joey's story had any truth to it, it definitely makes things look a little shady in the Tarek Grinstead case.
He was willing to put us in jail for 9 years. Because if we'd have went to trial and been convicted, it'd been 9 years that we had to serve. He was willing to do that to us to save his son, because his son was the one that done it all. So I know personally they will lie. They will lie to cover up their own, you know, to help their own people out. What I gather from it, and it's also why I decided I wanted to talk about it and say stuff about it. Before all this Tarek Grinstead stuff broke out, I see him on Facebook all the time posting pictures, looked like he was living a good life. And then after that, try to look him up, no more. Couldn't find him, can't be found on you know, social media. And when I learned that, I was like, dang, that is so, so weird. Why would he disappear right at that moment when I've been seeing him for years post stuff on Facebook, pictures, him and his girlfriends, you know, stuff like that. And all of a sudden, Tarek Grinstead breaks out again, and he's nowhere to be found. It's just small town corruption. You know, it's probably been going on for decades, the same family, you know, but something like this could bring it all crumbling down. Because if Bowden just knew, that's enough right there to want to cover it up and make it go away. How far is he willing to go? He's willing to throw three college students from Fitzgerald in prison for 9 years for something his son started.
Paul Bowden is still the district attorney today and is prosecuting Ryan Duke for the murder of Tarek Grinstead. The fact the district attorney's son was friends with Bo or Ryan at all seemed really strange. Sure, it's a small town, but wouldn't this be a conflict of interest? I asked Dusty what he thought about Joey's story.
It's probably true, but it could be that he's saying that because he's mad because the DA charged him with these charges. But, see, I've always heard about that fight. I mean, it was kind of famous, you know what I mean? Because it was this big fight with a lot of people involved. And there's always been rumors about there being cover-ups for as far as who did it, you know? And, I mean, you know, obviously three guys from Fitzgerald. That's not the names you heard of being the ones who did it.
He was right. Joey would clearly have a reason to be mad about this because he was charged. But the story he told me wasn't really that crazy. If so many others were involved in the fight, why were only three people charged? I called up Joey's friend, Lewis Fussell, who was friends with Josh Bowden and was also charged in the fight.
We didn't have nothing to do with it. We just went, and so we got caught up in it. So I think Paul threw us under the bus. They just wanted somebody to be arrested, make it look like they were doing something. But they just picked us.
I asked Lewis how well he knew Josh Bowden and if he knew Bo or Ryan, too.
See, I was hanging out with Bo and Ryan a lot, just that summer. But every time I spent a night with Josh, spent a night, you know, because he was just an acquaintance. You know, I knew him through Josh. When I was with Josh, we was hanging out with Bo.
The stories about this fight began to highlight what I've always thought was a serious issue in this case, the gag order.
I don't know what that gag order was about. It was like he was trying to protect somebody that knew and was keeping staying silent. I'm saying that's what it looks like to me, but, you know, man, for sure. And they threw me on it. They threw us on it. I was friends with Josh. They threw us on the bus because we were from Fitzgerald. That's how they are. That's how it's going to live. They're going to protect their own. They're going to protect their own, and that's true.
Within 4 days of Ryan Duke's arrest, Judge Melanie Cross signed into effect a gag order, preventing all law enforcement, suspects, and potential witnesses from speaking about the case. Every news report I read about this claimed the gag order was requested by Ryan Duke's public defender, John Mobley.
Irwin County public defender John Mobley, who's representing murder suspect Ryan Duke, asked for the gag order right after his client was arrested.
A few weeks after the gag order was put into effect, several prominent media outlets came together to oppose it, some claiming that the extreme vagueness and all-encompassing nature of the order was completely unconstitutional.
The media lawyers urged the judge to at least revise her order, limiting who is covered and opening up records that are normally public record.
I was there in the courtroom that day. On both sides of the courtroom were the two opposing parties, pleading their case to the judge.
Under Georgia law, gag orders are justified if there is a substantial likelihood that extrajudicial statements...
On one side were the representatives from news outlets and their attorneys, each making their own argument about why the gag order was unjustified. On the other side of the courtroom was Ryan Duke's defense attorney, John Mobley, because he was the one who requested the gag order in the first place.
The gag order is not directed in this case.
John Mobley was the only one speaking to the judge that day in favor of the gag order, but he wasn't the only one sitting at the table. Right there beside him was Paul Bowden, the district attorney, who's prosecuting Mr. Mobley's client for felony murder. I am by no means an expert when it comes to the court process, but this to me appeared incredibly ironic. Why would the district attorney be there in favor of the gag order too? Ryan Duke is not his client. Is it normal to go out of your way to show support for something that's supposed to give the person you're prosecuting a better chance at fighting off the charges? Or is there more than one reason for this gag order? Every article I could find about the gag order said it was requested by Ryan Duke's attorney. All but one, that is. Published in a local Fitzgerald paper called the Herald Leader on March 8, 2017, was a different story. The article reads, "The gag order was placed on investigators in the Grinstead case by a Tifth Circuit Superior County judge remains in place." One law enforcement official did say that the district attorney's office asked for the gag order as a means to maintain some control over the case information. I hadn't heard that before. If this was true, it made a lot more sense why District Attorney Paul Bowden would be sitting at the table with Ryan Duke's defense attorney that day. The article was written by a man named Tim Anderson. I gave him a call to get some clarity on this. The first thing that I asked was where that request for the gag order came from.
You know, all that came from the DA's office. You know, every defense attorney would ask for a gag order in every trial if they could. You know, that wouldn't be even remotely unusual, but the DA's reasoning, as I understand it, is that they're worried about finding an impartial jury. The attorney for Georgia Press is David Hudson, and David knows more about open records than anybody in the state. He said that the law is not written so that you always have to have a deaf, dumb, and blind juror to have a trial. That pre-knowledge does not disqualify a juror from sitting on a jury. You know, so what's the deal? Well, it's hush-hush too late, though. I mean, you know, 11 years after the fact is not when you try to shut everybody up. I mean, it's, you know, that horse has left, you know. Well, I'm not, you know, I think, you know, Ryan probably did it. But I don't, you know, and it's just like the Bo Dukes thing, you know, that he so obviously was involved in a deep and serious way. You know, how do we know he wasn't involved in her actual murder? You know, and we don't. You know, I think it's a kind of a foregone conclusion that he helped dispose of the body, but what do you do before that? You know, and don't we have a right to find that out first? I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how it plays out in the courtroom. There'll be a lot of people trying to keep the truth from coming out for their personal reasons. You know, because their son or their nephew or their whoever had some involvement, they don't want them drawn into it, you know. And there's a lot more cover-up in small towns than there is in the big cities because it's personal. It's going to be an interesting story as it plays out. I just want to see the truth told, whatever it is. So you keep after them. I've been thorn in people's side more than once, and, you know, nobody dies. Just makes them mad. They'll get over it.
I wanted to kind of, like, reach out to you, and to be honest, kind of had, like, anxiety about doing it, because on second thought, I just kind of, it's like, why does he give a crap what I think?
1 week after Ryan Duke's arrest, I got a random phone call from a young man in Osceola. He seemed overwhelmed by all the new information, as did I, but I couldn't really understand why he was calling me.
My grandfather, which I rarely even hear about in this case, my grandfather was actually the one when Ryan was in the courtroom. He was the one standing, like, right next to him where you could see him on camera. And matter of fact, most of the pictures that are in there, that's my grandfather that's walking him out. This whole thing's just baffling me. I'm looking at everybody's point of view, and when I'm reading your podcast, you have all these suspects. But then last week, the game changed. It changed everything we thought we knew about this case, who we thought would have been in it. I've been studying this case ever since it happened. I do know that I saw that Ryan lived in Pleasure Lake, which is crazy because that's about 3 miles from my grandfather's house. This happened in my little town of One Red Light, man, where everybody knows everything.
He mentioned several times to me about his grandfather, having worked closely on the case, and that he was the one standing next to Ryan Duke in the courtroom that day. I learned nothing substantial in our call, but I told him to keep in touch. 4 months later, just a few weeks ago, he texted me. He said, "How is my grandfather related to Ryan?" He sent me this text shortly after I released the last episode, where I aired this phone call.
I could tell you things that would make your hair stand on end. Ryan is related to Nelson Polk, who is the deputy that walked him into the courtroom for his arraignment that day. He's a deputy sheriff.
Was Nelson Polk this guy's grandfather? To refresh your memory, Nelson Polk was an officer at the Irwin County Sheriff's Department, and supposedly it was Nelson Polk and another officer named Alan Morgan who performed that search on the pecan orchard back in 2005.
Alan Morgan, both Nelson Polk and Alan Morgan, were part of that first investigation just a couple of weeks after she went missing in that pecan orchard.
I called him back immediately, and this time, he gave me a lot more detail about what he was trying to tell me the first time he called. He told me that even before the gag order, throughout the years, his grandfather, Nelson Polk, never told him much about this case, even when he asked him about it.
Every time I've ever asked him about this case, he tries to, like, brush it off as if, you know, nothing's new or anything like that. And it is, man, for all these years, like, any time I've ever asked him anything about the case, you know, when you're close to a cop or whatever, they tell you stuff. But, I mean, everything about this case has been kept hush. Whenever this first happened or whatever, you know, Nelson just never said anything about it. He never talked about it. I remember looking him in his eye, and it just looked like he had something, like, heavy weighing on his mind, like something he had just been kept, you know, in a closet forever. Something that the man looked dark. I asked him how was the case going. Did anything new come up in the case, or, like, what was going on? And he didn't say anything to me that day. And this was after 2 days after they brought Ryan in for their arraignment, where they're talking about where my papa brought him in. You could see him on the camera the whole time. And other than that, he hasn't said anything to me. The man knows something. Whether or not he'd be willing to tell it to me, I don't know. I mean, he's been a part of that sheriff's department going on 20, 30 years, man. I mean, just think about how indebted he is into that community. The man knows more than what we know. This just affected me in a way that this is no longer cool with me to just sit by anymore. This is, like, one of the craziest murder stories I've ever seen. And you've done a hell of a job uncovering it. It's just, this went from me following a podcast about a murder that's in my town to being involved with it. If I can get him to talk and say something, I will. I'm about to be pulling into my room right now.
He was extremely bothered by this, but who wouldn't be? To have followed this case your whole life and to hear over a decade later your grandpa's name, that would be pretty alarming. Ironically, less than 10 minutes later, his grandfather called him.
Hello? Hey. You have homes where you can talk?
Do I?
Are you, like, in a comfortable place where you can talk? Like,
yeah.
Look, I know a lot of stuff has been, like, being said that going on with this case and everything, and I've just been hearing your name thrown around a lot, and I've just really become, like, concerned about you and want to, like, know what's going on, because are you related to Ryan at all?
Yeah, I'm just a kid to him. I don't even know him, Dave. As far as I know, I've never met him.
Well, I know. I mean, I haven't talked. I wasn't calling like to accuse you of anything like that. I mean, it just, I mean, this went from being, you know, a case about terror. So I mean, people are throwing my family members around it, and I just wanted. I've been wanting to talk to you. I just didn't know how to like approach you about it because I didn't want you to think that, you know, I was accusing you of anything. It was just like, God dang, like people are throwing my grandfather's name around saying, I mean, they got all in that podcast about how you and some guy, Alan Morgan, went and did like an original search on Tara at the Pecan Orchard or something that's, like that.
That's exactly right. We did. There was a guy that went to another man and woman and told, or his friends, and told them that Ryan was at a party and was drunk. And he said he did all of this. They called me and Alan Morgan, and we met with them. We went to the Pecan Orchard. We searched it, got a statement from him, and turned it over to the GBI. But the GBI, you know, now, which is all different, all new age, it says, well, it's not in the file. If it isn't, not in the file, it didn't happen. So I went to his boss man and told him, and he came back and, of course, you got a statement from me and got a statement from that guy and all that. Yeah, we knew about this less than 2 months after she disappeared, that the GBI didn't do anything. So we, you know, they was working it. We couldn't basically interfere with their investigation. I know how it all come about, and I know all about the investigation and all this stuff on podcasts and all that. He's just trying to make a name for himself. He's right on some of that, and he's wrong on some of that. I don't even watch it. I don't even pay it no attention.
Okay. Well, Papa, I just want you to know that I love you, and I care about you. I just wanted to call and, like, ask you, and if you didn't want to talk to me about it, then, you know, I'm fine with that. But I just...
I'm not involved in any way, shape, form, or fashion.
That's all I want to know, Papa. I mean, it literally could have made me cry, like hearing your name thrown around in this, and I know how good of a man you are. So they know what happened to her, though?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they know the whole story. And see, there's a gag order, so, and they ain't going to release that information anyway. But there is a gag order, so they can't, you know, they can't tell the public.
Apparently there were rumors these whole 12 years. How did this, like, slip by for 12 years?
Well, I can't really go all into that, you know, that on account of that gag order.
There's only two main episodes left of Up and Vanish Season 1 on Tara Grinstead. Episode 23 will come out on Monday, July 17th, and Episode 24 will be a two-part season finale, with both episodes dropping at the same time on Monday, July 31st. As a reminder, there will be a Q&A episode this Thursday that will feature Maurice Godwin, Philip Holloway, and myself to answer any questions you have. Leave us a voicemail at 770-545-6411. If you have questions for Maurice, Philip, or myself specifically, you can state that in your voicemail. Today's episode was mixed and mastered by Resonate Recordings. If you want to improve the quality of your podcast or start a podcast of your own, go to resonaterecordings.com and get your first episode produced for free. This episode was recorded at Industrious Atlanta, Pont City Market. For $250 off your first month's office rent, visit industriousoffice.com/vanished. Thanks, guys. I'll see you soon.
Why, hello there. Welcome to Radio Rental. If you're new around here and haven't heard, I'm your host, Terry Carnation. On Radio Rental, we play tapes of the scariest true stories you've ever heard. That's right, we've got real scary stories told by the people that actually experienced them. We've got stories of paranormal peril, near-death experiences, stitches in the space-time continuum, and more. Stories like these.
This person was looking for me. They start to take these long strides towards me. I was freaking out.
We started seeing it everywhere we went. It would be sitting there watching us.
I've never ran so fast in my life.
And it's all set right here at Radio Rental, the video rental shop
of your worst nightmares.
Radio Rental is available now. Listen 1 week early and ad-free on Tenderfoot Plus.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.